Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and just being released here is something that is really neat. I got a real kick out of it when I read about it for the first time, and it's a board game that's based on the history and life here in the Copper Country. And so when I got an opportunity to talk to the guys who put it all together, I just jumped at the chance. So on the line right now, let's welcome Scott Deal and David Langton to Copper Country Today. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me on the program.
Hey, thanks for having us, Rick.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so your guys' board game is set to be released. It's going to be available for purchase. First, let's kind of get that out of the way, and we'll come back to it. People are going to, I'm sure, going to be excited about this. Where is this game going to be available?
Well, it's available on our website at shop.cmxgames.com, and it is also available at a few retailers in the Houghton area right now, in the Copper Country area. Sports Card Connection should have the game, though I think they may have sold out of what they had right now already. But I know that the Quincy Mine Hoist Association has a few copies in the gift shop, and Copper World has picked up copies also up in Calumet.
Michigan Historical Society has a few. We don't know if they've sold out yet. You know, maybe a board game shop near you.
Is this the first game the two of you designed?
Yes, it is.
And you went with a board game and not a video game. Is that just because of your personal expertise, or was that a conscious choice you made?
It was definitely a conscious choice. I think board games have had a resurgence in the last 15 years or so, really. I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, I probably kind of got back into them. I think maybe sort of this backlash against all the constant screen time.
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to sit down at a table with your friends and you know, talk to them over the board game as you play it. You know, it's something that you know, you don't always get with video games.
Games like Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, Dominion, and Pandemic, sort of more European style, modern style board games that are the ones that got me back into the hobby.
Pretty much the same for me.
Now, do those serve as sort of inspiration for the format that this game takes?
I guess in some ways, sure. Not directly. It's not directly related to the gameplay, but just sort of the style of game, I suppose. It's definitely an influence. When we say a European style or a modern style board game, we're talking about something that's more involved than just rolling dice and moving pieces on a board.
Okay.
So something that has, you know, the rules are going to be a little more complicated, but you're going to be able to invest a lot more of your brain in the game from a strategic standpoint.
Now, both of you gentlemen are from this area, so talk about how that serves as as a driving factor into wanting to use this area as the topic of this game.
Well, for over 30 years. My dad was a professor at Michigan Tech University, Larry Langton, and he taught about, wrote about, and researched Copper Country history. So he's had, I think, 4 books published on the subject, the most well-known one probably being Cradle to Grave. And as far as that inspiring the game, I guess back in around Christmas of 2012, I was home for the holidays. My dad had retired somewhat recently, and all of the stuff from his office had been moved into our home, my parents' home. So I was just around all of that, and at the same time, Scott and other friends were home for the holidays as well, and we were playing a lot of board games. And somehow those two things clicked, and I had an idea to make a game out of Copper Country history.
So it was something like 6 months later, somewhere around there, 7 months later, that we were back in the Copper Country and hanging out at Dave's house. And, you know, he plopped a, you know, cardboard prototype with handwritten cards out in front of us and had us play through it. And I was really excited by the idea of basing a board game on the history of the area. Talk to a lot of the people that we grew up with, and everybody's really proud of the area where they grew up. You know, myself in particular, you know, I always brag about out the Copper Country to my friends and take any opportunity to get them to come up and visit when I'm there, show them around the mining ruins and things like that.
And had you designed any other board games before?
Not since I was very young.
Really? Okay. Okay, so this is, because you started a company with this, so is this your the first product you've come out with then?
Yes, this is our first release as CMX Games.
Now, if you were going to compare it to a game that maybe people know, is there one that sort of best fits, like Monopoly or Payday or something like that, that sort of best fits what you've designed?
Well, those games that I mentioned earlier.
Okay, the European ones.
Yeah, the European-style games like Settlers or Ticket to Ride, those are known as sort of light games, which means that they're a little simpler and easier for new players to get into. And with Copper Country, we sort of tried to make a game that's one step above that in terms of complexity.
Okay, well, talk about your game.
It's in the game to try to allow you to play, you know, shorter games or, you know, if you are a gamer that's not as used to the Euro-style games.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, talk about how the game is played.
Well, in board game speak, it is an area control resource management game. I can kind of explain what those things mean. So area control is on the board, which is a map of the Copper Country region. You're going to be hiring miners and building shaft houses and hoist houses to increase your production and building company houses to encourage your miners to work more safely. So where you decide to build those buildings and hire those miners, those are sort of your areas of control on the board. Those are the areas that you're gonna sort of have ownership of on the game board. So that's what area control means. And then the resource management part, you're also going to be collecting these capital cards into your hand, which all have different resource types on them. Different things like a hoist engine, or a tram car, or a timberman, or any number of things. There's 66 of them. Yeah. Or, different mining techniques also, stopes, drifts, and sinking shafts. And so you collect those resources in your hand, and then there's another deck of cards called the production deck. And when you go mining, you are literally digging through that production deck, finding cards with copper on them, which is like your points. And then you spend your resources from your hand to collect the points off of those cards.
So
the game, each player controls a mining company, they hire miners onto the board, they build their buildings, as Dave was saying, and as the mining companies produce copper, you're taking poor rock and placing it onto the map. And what that does is that signifies the depletion of resources in the Copper Country. It makes it harder to mine in those areas. You need to invest more technology in order to be productive. But it also serves as a game clock. So as more of this, as copper is produced, as more poor rock is produced, the area changes, the game changes. So you move on to more advanced eras of production, and more technology becomes available, or historical events happen, or local businesses open, like Sheldon's General Store.
Or the Michigan College Mines.
Oh, is that in there too?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So the game ends when all the poor rock has been placed onto the map and the copper's all mined out. And then the mining company that has produced the most copper at the end of the game is the winner.
Was the copywriting of, using a lot of these places that actually exist, was that kind of a nightmare process?
Historical stuff like that is not an issue, really.
Really?
If the businesses no longer exist, which none of them do. I mean, even the Quincy Mining Company is defunct, really. The Quincy Mine Hoist Association now has control over the site, I believe, and the National Parks Service.
And how do you win? What determines who wins this game?
So at the end of the game, each player will have collected a set of production cards, by trading their resources in when they go mining, and each of those has a copper value on them. and you basically add up the copper at the end, and whoever has the most is the winner. There are a couple like extra twists into that that make the different types of copper more valuable to some companies than others. So there's sort of an extra dimension there that that you can add in.
Well, it sounds like you know, just hearing about it, and of course reading the press release you guys put out there, you know, it's a capitalist dream of, you know, of like, you know, just like kind of how Monopoly is, you know, the more you achieve, the more you win. But you guys are from an area that the business side of mining is only one part of it. There was also, of course, you know, the labor element and the strike, and also, you know, especially more recently, an environmental side to it. Does any of that play into the game?
All of those things play into the game, actually.
How?
So we can start with labor issues, I suppose. I mean, we wanted to capture things realistically, and mining was not fun for people. It was dangerous to be underground. So when you go mining, there are going to be cards in that production deck where all the copper is hiding that are going to require you to either upset your miners and risk a strike, essentially, or even result in the death of some of your workforce.
And so then when that occurs, on later turns, you'll have to spend time managing your workforce, so either negotiating with your striking workers or paying to have new immigrants come into the community to replace your losses.
And then from an environmental standpoint, I mean, Scott had talked about the poor rock earlier, which is the waste byproduct of copper production. You just anywhere, almost up in copper country, if you take a look around, you can see a pile of borax sitting somewhere to this day.
Or a building made out of it.
Or a building made out of borax, or an entire beach made out of sand. So
if you look at the board at the end of a game, these borax tokens I was talking about are little black, like rock-shaped things, and you place them on the map of the copper country when you produce copper. The game ends when all of them are on the map. And so at the end of the game, there's more rocks strewn across the map of the copper country. So it looks like the area has piles of stamp sand around it, basically.
Yep.
No, it definitely sounds to follow the history. But, you know, the history of the copper mining industry spanned, you know, decades from the, you know, middle of the 1800s until just within a couple of decades ago, if you don't count some of the outskirts mines, but at least in this area, to what, the 1960s, I think, is when the local mines finally closed. So how much do you cover of that span?
The game starts at the, the beginning of the mining boom. And
1840, roughly.
Yeah, and it plays out over the three eras. We say the era of exploration, the era of expansion, and the era of exploitation. So basically, I mean, when would you say we approximately end the game?
Somewhere in when the mines start to decline around the 1920s, really, is where the game kind of assumes the end of the industry.
So we do actually have one card that depicts the White Pine mine. So, you know, you could say it goes, you know,
a little bit further.
Yeah.
But.
And how does the 1913 strike play into the game?
So there is an event card. So we have these event cards. There will be two events that occur every game. One's a 19th century event, and then one will be a 20th century event. So one of the 20th century events is the strike. So when that comes up, we sort of capture how the companies view the strike, since the players are playing as companies. So we look at it from that perspective in the event. And historically, what happened is the companies basically waited out the miners. You know, the companies had a stockpile of cash, they were fine. And though the miners finally got organized, winter was approaching, and it was not going to be easy to survive a copper country winter without your paycheck. So representing it from the company's point of view on this event card, what it basically allows you to do is bring in scabs, which is what the companies did to keep the mines going during the strike. And so that's how that card is represented in the game.
David, when you were designing and writing things for this, because of your, you know, being exposed to your dad's, you know, knowledge of history, were you going to him and did you have to do a lot of research, or was this stuff that you kind of were really familiar with from the get-go?
It was some familiarity. The research involved reading my dad's books and asking him questions. And I did a lot of that. Also, every single card in the game has a little bit of flavor text or lore or history written on it. That doesn't affect the gameplay, but just allows you to learn a little bit something about mining or the area or the history of the area. And, you know, I had him edit all of that stuff or even write some of them or give me ideas for them.
Yeah, he contributed a few little tidbits that are sprinkled throughout the rule book, too.
Yes. Also, yeah, we have sort of a short history of the Copper Country that we split up into 9 or 10 parts, and we've layered it into the rule book in places where reading that history will give you insight into what we're trying to do with the game for that section of the rules.
How's the artwork with the game, and how did you come up with that?
So we hired an artist who we found online. His name is Chris Park, and he's also known as Plant Monster Studios. He's in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I had a style I was looking for, and when Chris sent the first sample back, it was exactly right. So it was pretty easy to pick him at that point. And then I just went to Minneapolis and met with him, and we talked about the project. And then after that, we just worked online back and forth. And it took quite a bit of time. There's a lot of art in the game. There's something over 130-ish,
I think.
Different illustrations in the game that are all historically accurate, or as historically accurate as we can make them, with the information that's available to us these days.
Go ahead. Sounds like you know, it's definitely a complicated game. What is your target age range for those that will play it?
So 14 plus is what's printed on the box. You find that to be about right. You could probably. We've seen some younger players play the game also. It is definitely a, you know, a strategy game that will.
Yeah, we play it with, you know, kids of some of our board gamer friends that are, you know, around the 10 or 11 age, but yeah, they've already been sort of immersed in that type of game.
Yeah,
so, you know, picking it up from scratch, yeah, I think we recommend 14 plus.
Mm-hmm. And how many players play at a time?
2 to 4.
We find it plays best with 3.
3 is our favorite number, yeah.
Any reason why?
I think it's, so the game, the way the game works, the length is roughly the same, no matter how many people play, because there's still the same amount of poor rock that you're going to be dumping onto the surface. But with 3 players, it just seems to be the best balance of available space on the board and also limited space on the board because of what the other players are doing.
This really sounds pretty great. I'm talking right now with Scott Deal and David Langton, who have designed a Copper Country board game that is going to be, or you should be able to find it locally here by the time this interview airs, so you want to check it out. Now, something like this had to have cost some money to do. So how did you get together the funds to be able to do it?
Well, we started out by putting in a decently sized investment of our own, largely to pay for the art and the prototypes and play testing. And once we were convinced that the game was ready, we went to Kickstarter with the game. And for people who aren't familiar with Kickstarter, it is a fundraising platform for generally creative projects. And you put your project idea up on the Kickstarter website, and people can pledge an amount of money to your project, and at certain pledge levels, they'll get a reward. So for a board game, for example, they might pledge, in the example of Copper Country, it was, $48, I think our pledge level was. So anybody who gave us $48 would get, you know, one of the first copies of the game that got made from the first print run as their reward. And that's how we raised enough money to meet a printer's minimum print run requirement. So we have to print at least, you know, 1,500 copies of the game. So we had to raise enough money to get all those copies printed.
So we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of when we launched that Kickstarter.
Yes, we are.
Well, how successful was it?
The Kickstarter was very successful, especially for our first one. Our funding goal was kind of a strange number, $31,200, I think it was. And we raised, was it almost $55,000?
Wow. Yeah. That is pretty good.
Yeah, we had close to 1,000 people back the game. So we actually raised enough money with the Kickstarter that we ordered 2,000 copies instead of the 1,500 minimum requirement. And as of this week, we have shipped out those 1,000 copies roughly to all of our Kickstarter backers. And now we're sort of moving on to the full release of the game and trying to get it into game stores around the country.
Yeah, I have some personal experience with this is, you know, sometimes getting distribution is, you know, as big of an obstacle as it is designing what it is that you're trying to get out there. What have you had experienced?
So because we know, I mean, both of us have had to learn everything about this process from beginning to end. With distribution, we were able to find a company to offer basically distribution services. It's called Impressions. They're based out of, California, with a warehouse in Indiana. But anyway, they have a relationship with all the distributors in the U.S. and many distributors worldwide. So they agreed to work with us on Copper Country, and we just shipped them a big pile of games, for 600 or so, and then they're getting them out into stores for us. So that part, thankfully, that was one part where we didn't have to learn the entire process ourselves.
Now, you have an event coming up where people can get some, you know, they can try this out firsthand, and it's coming up in Houghton soon. Talk about that.
Well, we're excited to have a launch event at Sports Card Connection. It's going to be Saturday, May 23rd, from 12 to 4 p.m., so in downtown Houghton, Sports Card Connection. So we'll have, you know, copies of the game to demo. We'll get Sports Card Connection some extra copies to sell. We'll also have some Copper Country prizes for people that stop by. We've got some promo cards, production samples, uncut sheets of the cards, things like that. So, you know, stuff that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise. We're really excited to be having this event at Sports Card Connection. This is where we grew up. We go downtown to buy our, you know, both our sports cards when I bought those, and also then later on some of our games that we would play, like Magic the Gathering or Star Wars CCG, we would go down there and play all the time. So it's really pretty trippy to see the game that we created on their shelves.
Yeah, it's awesome. we'll be running demos. We'll sign copies of the game if you buy one or have one already and bring it in, and answer any questions anybody has about the game or how to play or the whole design or production process. And Sports Card Connection will also be offering people a 20% discount on the game during the event. So if you're thinking about picking up the game, it'll be a great opportunity to come down and do so.
Guys, I can definitely see the appeal to people that are from this area and familiar with the mining industry. What's your projections on how this game will do outside of this area?
Well, it's based on the Kickstarter, it could do pretty well. I mean, as first-time publishers making a game about a reasonably obscure part of American history, there was some work to get people's attention, definitely. We find that once we can get someone to sit down and try out the game or take a look at it, like, the response is very positive. From our Kickstarter campaign, I mean, at first, it was a lot of friends, family, and fellow Upers backing us at the very beginning. But then as the campaign went on, it was more and more just people from anywhere.
Yeah, just people interested in board games. And you can find a lot of cool board game projects on Kickstarter, and they found us and hopped on board.
Terrific. Scott Deal, David Linkton, who's got the Copper Country board game. I certainly encourage all the listeners to stop in Houghton to their kickoff event. If somebody wants to order a copy, because they're all sold out, you guys mentioned earlier how they can do that. Can you mention that one more time?
Yep, at shop.cmxgames.com.
Thanks so much for joining me on the program.
Hey, thanks for having us, Rick.
Yeah, thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.